Welcome back to Life in the Front Office. I'm your host, Jake Hirschman, and today I have Pete Pachorek, Director of Athletics at Principia College. And I was joined up with Pete a while back via Fred Clare, one of our co-hosts, who many of you may know. But Fred is a dear mentor of Pete's, and would love for Pete to share some stories about how Fred has really truly impacted his life, and then we'll talk about Pete's unique history throughout his career and his family's history. Definitely some really good stories to share. And then we'll dive into Character Loves Company, which is his nonprofit and also a book he has authored. So a man of a lot of accomplishments. Pete, welcome to the podcast.
Jake, thanks so much. I'm honored to be on your show tonight.
No, thanks for being here. And I want to start off with your relationship with Fred. You mentioned earlier when we were talking about how he's been such an influence in your life. And I guess backtrack a little bit to where you started, but then maybe where Fred came in and how he's helped you progress throughout your career.
I love it. I love to start right there with, kind of Fred and the influence he's had. And if I could backtrack just a little bit, all young people growing up have the fortune of having great parents as role models. And my pops, my dad, has been a terrific role model of mine. I've been a coach for 50 years, actually just retired from coaching out in Southern California, where you and Fred are out there in Pasadena area. He was the PE coach at Claiborne School, which is a nursery all the way through eighth grade. He's influenced a lot of lives. But my mom, who I only had in my life till I was 12, she passed away when I was 12, but probably the most influential person in my life is my mom, who just really laid the foundation for doing things the right way, knowing how to battle through adversity. She passed away with cancer when I was 12 years old, as I said, but she's just somebody who's in my heart, and she's influenced me greatly. And that kind of leads me to Fred, who just my professional career and where I am today. If it wasn't for Fred Clare and his really just, ability, he's just such a caring person, his professionalism. When I think back on when I first reached out to him, I was hoping I'd get, 5 minutes or maybe just a reply from an email. And it turned into a 16-17 year relationship where he's helped me and mentored me through some different times and just has been a key to my success. Fred's connected me with one of your past guests, Bill Schumard, who is a former athletic director himself, and now he's the CEO of a great organization, the Special Olympics in Southern California. And just really, mentors are so important. It's something I learned from Fred 16 years ago, is to really start to establish those circles of mentors and those circles of people that I know you've talked about on a previous podcast, Jake. So I've really taken that to heart, and everywhere I've gone, I've really tried to build strong relationships. I was fortunate to be the head instructor and head coach at IMG Academy down in Bradenton, Florida, and the director of baseball there, Dan Simons, is a terrific role model of mine and a great mentor. And then just along the way, my second master's degree at the University of Florida, the chair of the sport management program there, Dr. Michael Sagas, has been unbelievable. And then another ex-Dodger, Gary LaRocque, who's now the director of player development for the Cardinals, has become a great mentor of mine as well. And these are all contacts that really started and kind of funneled through Fred Clare. As you know, he's just a wonderful person.
Well, and you talk about having different mentors in different spaces of the industry, right? Gary's within professional baseball. You mentioned Dan within, the IMG Academy, kind of in the high school space, Bill within the Special Olympics space. What makes it so special in that they can probably provide some different insights and different perspectives for you who is in college athletics?
Well, and they've all of them were collegiate athletes or high-level high school athletes. And it's just that passion. It's that passion for doing things the right way. It's that passion for excellence. And that's the Dodger model that Fred first shared with me. And it's resonated through everything he's done when he's left the Dodgers after 30-plus years and moved on to working at USC and Caltech, and just bringing that sense of excellence and doing things the right way in everything he did. And when I talk to Bill, every conversation I have with Bill or Gary LaRocque or anybody, Fred's name comes up because he's just been so impactful in so many people's lives. And so really sports, it doesn't matter if it's the youth level, the high school level, collegiate level, or professional level, it's all the same thing. We're all teaching We're all teaching life skills. We're all trying to teach the young people that we're fortunate, or the older people that we're fortunate to work with, you know, how to just really how to do things the right way, and, you know, how to be a good teammate, how to operate with integrity, how to be professional. It all ties in.
Well, and with that, that leads me to the book that you wrote, and the nonprofit you started with Character Loves Company. Give our listeners who have now surpassed 3,000 on our podcast, so thank you for listening and continue to share with your colleagues and friends. But Pete, you know, share a little bit about Character Loves Company and what it's really all about, and how we can spread the message about that.
Thank you so much, Jake. I appreciate that way to plug my book and my nonprofit. So it's called Character Loves Company, Defining the Teachable Moments in Sports, a guidebook to character literacy development. So that's a mouthful for sure. But if you look it up on Amazon, you can look it up as Character Loves Company. And I'm actually, it's basically the nonprofit and the book all tie together. It's a curriculum of teaching character, a progressive step-by-step character development curriculum in emphasizing character literacy through sport. And it applies to the youth levels all the way, you know, 5 years old, all the way up through 22, 23 year olds. And it can also be applied to professional athletics too. I'm actually talking with some Major League Baseball teams at their lower levels, the rookie ball level, on, you know, utilizing a similar curriculum to help these young people realize that, hey, everybody wants to play in the big leagues, but it's not going to happen for everyone. But at the same time, you're learning life skills. They're going to help you be a better dad, a better mom, a better brother, sister, business partner, CEO, whatever it is you do, what you're learning in sports, and, you know, the adversity you face and the toughness and the grit and all those qualities that are so important to being successful in life are going to stick with you. So I'm actually really proud. I'm very fortunate and honored that I'm teaching a graduate level class at the University of Florida. Just started 3 weeks ago. I taught it last spring as well. And the textbook for that class is my book, is my guidebook to character literacy development. And it's just fun. Last year I had 15 graduate students from University of Florida in the class. It's an online class. And this year, I think I have 17 this year. It's just really fun. It's an interactive class, and getting a chance to hear from some of the people in my class are high school coaches, you know, they're directors of local recreation centers and different things like that, and learning how to really emphasize and be deliberate and intentional about teaching character, put it into your game plan, instead of just, you know, hoping that you randomly intersperse, you know, a character moment in there, but it's putting it on your practice plan, working it into your game plan as to what a message is to help these young people realize how, you know, how these life skills are—they're learning them. You know, they're learning these life skills throughout sports, and a lot of times I don't even know they're doing it. But helping them connect the dots.
No, sure. And I also did a little bit of homework and found out that your student athletes over at Principia College are quite the students, quite the GPA accomplishments. Can you speak a little bit about that?
I'll tell you what, the student athletes at Principia College are amazing. We're a very small Christian institution, wonderful place built on just great foundations, and I really love it there. 51% of our student body, Jake, participate in student athletes. That's pretty amazing. We have two sport athletes. We have a couple of three sport athletes who are also double majors. Just amazing what these young people are able to accomplish and stay focused and somehow manage their time. We had a 3.35 GPA last year for our student athletes while they were in season. And we had 36, 18 in the fall and 18 in the spring, 36 4.0 student athletes, which we have a plus and minus scale. So if you get one A minus, you can't be on that 4.0. So it's really remarkable.
Incredible.
I think there were 55 or 56 academic all conference, which means they had a 3.5 or above. And so just really proud of the accomplishments in the classroom. We make that a big, you know, it's very important, very big emphasis for me and all of our coaches is being a student before an athlete. But at the same time, we're also working to raise the bar athletically. We've had some successes. We're going through a rough patch right here in the winter, but we're going to bounce back. And as you know, as well as I do, and Fred talks about this and Bill, we learn a lot from adversity. And so
Absolutely. Even
when the teams are down a little bit, they stay positive with each other. The coaches really, truly do a remarkable job. Really fortunate to have a great coaching staff at Principia College, and proud of our student athletes and proud of our coaches.
No, well, and I guess how is the experience from your past turns at IMG Academy and even professional baseball and just growing up in your family, who you had said has had 9 professional baseball players in it, including a unique story about your dad. We'll get to that. But what has that all taught you now that you're, you know, at the director of athletics position where you're at? And, you know, when you look back at your career thus far, you know, are there things that you've learned along the way that you think stemmed from when you were an athlete yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, everything is a learning process. I have a lot to learn as an athletic director. I'm very fortunate, and I think I'm very grateful every day that I had the opportunity to be hired as a, you know, fairly young. I like to think that I'm fairly young director of athletics in the field of collegiate, you know, the collegiate world of sport. And but along the way, from the times I was in the minor leagues, I spent 9 years in the minor leagues. A lot of people would say, man, 9 years, and you didn't quite make it. I got up to AAA and didn't quite crack in. And they think, well, was that a waste of time? I said, absolutely not. I learned so much from riding those buses and, you know, 13-hour bus ride and having to get up the next day and still perform and still play and compete.
I was going to say, how many bus rides do you think you took in 9 years?
I've never thought about that. I don't know if I want to know.
But, I mean, what if you kept a journal, knowing that you'd play 9 years in the minors and you'd put a tally for every bus ride you had?
How many miles? I think I played in every single state. But you know what? For any pro baseball player who's listening to this or parents of a pro baseball player, what I would wish I would have done, and now technology is better. Cell phones were just coming out back when I was playing, and then laptops with the capability of having Wi-Fi and all that stuff. But I wish I would have done like Rosetta Stone and learned Spanish. I'm trying to pick up Spanish now because it's so, you know, important in the sport world. And we're, you know, working on recruiting some international students from, you know, Latin America and Spanish speaking countries. But I wish I would have, think about that. If I would have known 9 years on a bus, I could be fluent in Spanish and German and French and every language.
You could have written another couple of books.
And I could have started writing books. Exactly. I kind of just sitting there watching movies. There's only so many times you can watch Caddyshack on a bus.
That's right. Well, and you know, some of the places you were going probably early on were maybe not the most desirable locations, right?
Definitely not. I'm not going to name any names, but there were some rough areas, some of them, and staying in some rough hotels in the minor leagues. But it made you tougher, and you know, sheets that didn't fit on the bed and your feet are hanging off the bed and things like that. But it just, you know, it's the teamwork. That's what I miss the most. I mean, I had some unbelievable teammates that I still keep in contact with, and I don't want to name drop, but one of my roommates is, you know, just really proud of the accomplishments he's had is David Ross, who's won 2 World Series, one with the Red Sox, one with the Cubbies. And Rossi is just an unbelievable guy, terrific teammate. And I can't believe he came in second on Dancing with the Stars, but it's fun. I mean, I learned a lot from him, and hopefully he learned something from me along the way. But just great people, you know, hard working. It does. I mean, it applies to everything you do in life, you know. So everything we've learned in the sport world, I know you were an athlete yourself, and everything we've learned in the sport world makes us that much more effective at what we're doing once we're done with sports.
When you were competing – and knowing your family history of 9 professional baseball players, and knowing your dad got up to the big leagues, did you ever feel any pressure to, you know, be someone you maybe weren't, or any pressure to succeed or get there faster than anyone else?
Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, I did. Just, you know, my dad played in the big leagues, and my uncle Tom played for 18 years in the major leagues. He's the one that most people have heard of. He announced for the White Sox after on WGN, Hawk Harrelson and Tom Wimpy Pachoric up in Chicago. But and another uncle, Jim, played in the major leagues as well. And then I got the furthest in the second generation, kind of let the family down. No, I'm just kidding. But but it, you know, it was kind of like an expectation that it's easy to get to the big leagues, and it's not. I mean, as you know, and Fred knows, and anybody's been around professional athletics or high level athletics, it's tough. I mean, as you move up levels, guys are better, and they're not trying to let you hit that 97 mile an hour fastball on the black, and they're trying to get you out. And, you know, I had opportunities and got close, but couldn't quite crack. And you never know. I mean, I'm a big believer that God has a plan for each of us. And, you know, I feel like what I'm doing now is really blessing a lot of people, and it's blessing myself and blessing my family. So just very grateful to be where I am today.
Well, I want to go back to your book and your nonprofit, because people kind of question how did you get to Character Loves Company, right? Like when I co-authored my book with Andy and a few others, you know, the title, it took us a while to get there. And then I think now that we've wrote it and it's been out for a year, the title might be a little long, but it's, you know, it is what it is. But it makes sense, right? How did you get to Character Loves Company? What was truly behind it, and maybe the inspiration from it?
You know, that's an excellent question. I really have to go back to Dr. Sagas, Dr. Michael Sagas from University of Florida there. He was helping me throughout writing this book, and as I was doing my master's in sport management there, and really giving me some good advice. And we were talking about a concept of misery loves company. Like I was talking about how people that are miserable, they like to hang out together. And so I wanted to write this book, and I wanted coaches, good coaches who cared about doing the right thing, to hang out together, because you know that the more who you hang out with, they influence you. So if you're hanging out with miserable people, they're going to bring you down. So that's where that concept came up, Character Loves Company. So it's like, you know, people that like talking about character, they like to be around other people that like to talk about character. And trust me, I've done probably 100, more than 100 now, community talks, especially when I was down in Florida prior to coming up to Illinois for this athletic director job at Principia. And I go around and do talks at local rec centers about character development and talk with coaches about how important it is. I remember doing one of my first ones was with a group of football coaches, and the director of the rec center said, "Hey, we got this guy coming in. He's an ex-professional baseball player. He's going to talk to you about character." And you can just imagine these guys rolling their eyes like, "Oh my gosh, we want to listen to this guy." And, you know, football coaches, they just wanted to have their draft and get their players and get their teams and get out of there. And when the director shared with them that I was going to be talking about character, they probably weren't super happy. But it was amazing. These football coaches, at the end of the day, they said, "This is awesome. How do we do more of this? How do we make this a part of our practice plan and our game plan?" Because we all want to do it. I mean, most coaches are in it for the right reason, but they get caught up in the winning at all costs and all that. And so I just gave them a little game plan. And that was kind of the genesis of this idea of Character Loves Company, is coming up with a roadmap or a game plan. It's progressive and it builds on, you know, the previous week. Maybe they pick 5 character values out of the 25 that I list in the book, and they focus on just those 5. Maybe they only focus on 1 for the whole season, but at least they're focusing on something. And you know what it does too, is when you're working with parents, especially, you know, in today's world, parents are kind of helicoptering and they're hovering and they want to be involved and they want to make sure you have the best interests of their son or daughter. But if you're sending an email out every biweekly email every couple of weeks about what you're teaching the young people about character, trust me, that's going to get the parents off your back. And even if Johnny or their son's not playing shortstop and batting third, and they're not happy with his playing time, if they know that they're learning life skills from this coach, they're going to back off and give that coach some room. So it definitely is something that a lot of coaches who have bought my book or are using my book to really as this template for teaching character, they really appreciate. Just that it gives them some drills and some activities to use to better emphasize, you know, what's really important about youth sports, which is teaching these young people to be really to be good people.
No, absolutely. And I'm going to put you on the spot here. For our listeners, what's maybe one aspect of the character list that you have that they could focus on within their job, within the business of sports?
You know, I think of Bill Schumard, and I think of him as the CEO of the Special Olympics, and just what a wonderful person he is. And every time I talk to him, I go away with just such a gratitude for his humility. And I think that's something that humility, which I think leads to a growth mindset. If you're humble, people that think, and students, athletes who think they know everything, they have that fixed mindset, they're not going to look to grow. So I think that the ability to stay humble and realize that you always have something to learn, you always have a way to improve. I don't know if Bill Schumer told you this story, but when he first started at Special Olympics, they're influencing, I think, 8,800 kids. and that was great. Our young people or people with, you know, different physical and intellectual challenges. And since then they've grown by four or five times and just never settling on good enough. And I think that you have to have humility to do that. So that's probably the one. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, I could focus on any one, but that one just jumped into my head because as I think back on the influence that Bill and Fred both have had in my life.
As you've gone on in your career, who are some people that you've maybe impacted the same way that Fred and Bill have? And is there maybe a success story that you could share there?
Wow, that's awesome. Great question. I was just sharing with somebody, it might've been Fred or Bill, about how I'm now at a point where some people are actually reaching out to me as a mentor. So it's kind of that it goes full circle, that pay it forward type of thing. You know, people that have impacted me, now I get a chance to potentially play a small part in the development of somebody else. And a young man who played for me at Principia College, his name is Spencer Clevenger. He only played for me for 1 year because then I went down and I took a job at IMG, but we kept in contact and I helped him get an internship at IMG. There were a lot of applicants and they chose him because maybe partly because of my recommendation, but just he's a worker. And he's now a strength coach with the Miami Marlins, which is the field he was always passionate about going into. And I feel like, you know, I've been somewhat of a mentor for Spencer and just so proud of him. He'll be a big league strength coach here in 5 years. He's amazing. And really that quality of humility, and a work ethic that he has is just amazing. It's people like that who are just willing to work and they're about doing things the right way. I'm sure that's why Fred and Bill have such an affinity towards you. And it's helping good people that, you know, are going to make an impact in the sport world or the world in general. And so that's one success story with Spencer Clevenger, who's just really doing some awesome things with the Miami Marlins.
Well, you'll have to share this with Spencer if he's not listening. So that way he hears his shout out. But, you know, when you think about the world of college athletics, a lot of people think about, right now I'm working at Purdue, right? So the Big Ten, the Power Five schools, and then the mid-major Division One schools. And then there's the Division Two and Division Three. And I played a Division Three school. And truly, there is somewhat of a division, right, within the NCAA of the experiences that you might have. But maybe talk a little bit about your experience on the business side as an athletic director and what you've learned there. And what are the opportunities for those who want to get into the business of sports that maybe aren't going to focus on, trying to go work at a Power Five school, right? Because, Andy and I talk about all the time the loss of logo concept and, getting hung up on, oh, it's Michigan or, oh, it's Ohio State and, Texas and getting caught up in the logo, right? But the work that you're doing is still extremely impactful, right? And looking at it from that perspective and enjoying what you do on a day-to-day basis and impacting people like you were talking about.
I love that word. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, that word impact. And that's why I'm where I am today at Principia. I feel like I can impact positively the coaches, the campus community, and obviously, number one, the student athletes. I think a lot of people, when I was in professional baseball, I thought, okay, when I retire, I played for X amount of years, I'm going to be a Division I head coach, baseball coach or whatever. And then, but it's those jobs don't come open very easily. And I wasn't prepared to be a Division I head coach when I first got out. I was barely prepared to be a Division III head coach. And, and your priorities change. I love the Division III model because it really is about being a student before an athlete. And I'm not knocking Division I because it's wonderful, and Division II as well. But those divisions, you're really more of an athlete, and then you you're a student also. And obviously you get out of it what you put in. And there's a lot of Division I athletes that are amazing students. But the Division III model is really built around this idea of balance. And I love that for students. You can double major. You can do the major that you want to do. You can play a sport or even two. You can have a social life outside of sports. So you're building pillars to lean on for the rest of your life and not just one pillar, which is just athletics. And so there's a lot of people don't understand. I mean, there's most people listening on your show here probably have never heard of Principia College. We're a small college in Elsa, Illinois. You probably never heard of Elsa, Illinois. We're about 40 minutes from St. Louis. We're on the Illinois side of the Mississippi River. And there's so many schools that I've never heard of them. You know, you go to a convention and there's different schools. Oh, I've never heard of that school. Well, they've never heard of my school either. But and you're sharing ideas, but it's about impacting lives. It's about young people having a chance to play sports for 4 more years, play a sport that they're passionate about, that they love, that they, and that goes back to my book. But if they're learning life skills and they realize, and coaches are helping them crystallize this idea and connect the dots, that they're learning to be a better dad, you know, better business partner, whatever it is they're going to do, more caring, put other people, not just always put yourself first, but working, knowing how to work as an effective member of a team, and respecting each other and finding joy in seeing the accomplishments of other people. And that's what I think being a good teammate is, when the guy hits that home run and you're the first one up on the top step because you're so fired up that they just, for their success. It's the same thing. You see that in sports. You see some people who, they get really excited about successes of their teammates, and you see others who are like, if it wasn't them having the success. And those are the people that you don't really surround yourself with. You want to surround yourself with high character people. But going back to your question, Division III, the model's awesome. There's over almost 400 NCAA Division III colleges out there. And I know you said you played. Did you go to Redlands?
I was at the University of Redlands. Yep.
Yeah, so that's a wonderful school. And there's so many awesome schools out there. And a lot of kids, they put their eggs in one basket of, I'm going D1 or bust. And, it's great if you can play at that level. But a lot of times you sit on the bench and kind of wilt away, where you can be a rock star and superstar and do what you love to do and be a leader and be a captain and make an impact in lives at a Division III or a Division II program.
No, absolutely. And you talked about being a better dad. You've got 3 kids. How do you balance life along with a nonprofit, along with being an athletic director? I'm sure there's other endeavors you have, whether it's coaching on the side and, for sports, right? It's always kind of the notion of, work or come to work early, stay late, as Fred has always said. And it's always the extra hours on the weekends and that sort of thing, separate from other jobs. But how do you keep the balance?
That's a great question. And if you want to be a Division III, Division II, or Division I athletics director, I'm not going to lie and sugarcoat it. You're going to be there. You're going to put in hours. But what I love about the institution where I work at Principia is that my kids, when they get out of school, they come to the games and they're hanging out until bedtime. I'll leave at, for basketball, I'll leave at halftime and put the kids to bed, kiss them good bed, and then come back to the game so I can catch the tail end and make sure I can shake the hands and look the student athletes in the eye and tell them nice job at the end of the day and make sure everything is, the facility is all tidied up after and all that. And I have a tremendous staff, but it's bring the kids with you. I always thought, I wanted to play in the big leagues for 20 years so that my kids could come to Dodger Stadium and watch me hit home runs and watch me play. And that didn't work out exactly like that. But I love where I am now, especially it's a really, just high character student athletes that we have. And so I trust my kids around any of our student athletes. And it's funny, my son and my daughters too will run up. They'll see some athletes that they've gotten to know and they'll run up and sit with them in the stands. And I can just turn the other way and I can do my job and interact with people the way I do. And I know that my kids are in good hands. So it is long hours, like you said, but it's fun. I mean, if you're involved in athletics, you love it. And it doesn't even feel like a job, especially when the game starts or practices start and I get to go around and just support the student athletes and support the coaches. That's such a fun part. I'm honored. And I feel so privileged and grateful to be an athletic director.
Well, and as an athletic director, there's obviously a business side to it as well. For those who want to try and get into the collegiate side of athletics and onto the business side, what are some areas that they can look at or learn about? Obviously there's the development aspect, facilities, marketing, et cetera. And it may not be as full blown at the Division III level, but where are some areas that students can look at?
I think there's amazing, and if people are working full time to provide for their family or for themselves, there's amazing online programs. I ended up at Florida, but I looked at Ohio, Ohio State. I mean, nameless. I mean, the list is endless. There's some wonderful programs out there, and you know, that's, so that's a way to continue to further their education while still working full time on the, using the online or mainly online platform. But also, like, you know, as far as jobs, entry jobs into the sports world, you know, being a high school coach, you know, coaching the high school level, getting that on your resume. If there's ever a chance to serve on a committee, to take advantage of that, to build your resume, like we talked about to start off the show, the mentoring aspect, start building mentors and connecting with people because they're going to help connect you to potentially your next job. I think if you want to be somebody who wants to be an athletics director, big part of my job is advancement, working with our advancement office, which is, you know, ultimately working with donors who are typically alumni who love their experience. And that's a big part of being an athletics director is, you know, going out and raising money to provide for your institution and provide for your student athletes. Because the better you do it, better I do it, my job as far as that goes with advancement, the better the experience is, and the more we can provide terrific opportunities for travel. Like our teams go out to, we're coming out to California here in middle of March for spring break. We're going to bring our baseball team and two tennis, our men's and women's tennis teams out and compete against Redlands and Occidental and Laverne and some great schools out there in the conference in that SCIAC conference that you are a part of.
Oh yeah.
And it's a great conference. Usually we get roughed up sometimes, but it's good. The level of competition out there in California is a little stiffer because they're outside a lot longer, a lot earlier than we are. A lot of times when we go to spring break, that's the first time we're outside competing. So, so the better I do at that advancement work, the better we can provide for our student athletes and the overall, really my ultimate goal or priority is the student athlete experience at Principia. And so I would say that you mentioned marketing, sports information, director of athletic communication, being a strong writer is very important to my job, as well as, you know, a lot of, you know, writing press releases, our sports information director, and just proposals and things that you're always going to bat for your teams and trying to make their experience the best you possibly can.
Well, and I think writing was brought up in one of our other episodes with Jeff Idelson from president of Cooperstown and just how important it is. And Fred hit on it all the time of, you know, his days in PR, you know, you take writing and that's a form of communication. And then you take social media. You're kind of at the helm of, you know, where there's a lot of student athletes participating and social media is kind of one of those uncontrollable things. How do you go about teaching not only the student athletes about what they should and shouldn't post, but really how to identify themselves as good character people online as well as in person?
I'm smiling, Jake, because I just had yesterday, I just had a code of conduct meeting, which we do before every season. So with our spring athletes coming back from the holiday break, and now they're getting ready, practicing indoors, all of our spring sports. And so we had our code of conduct, and that's one of the things that I spent a little bit of time focusing on is, you know, we're not on social media. It's not a platform to rip the officials. If you think they missed a call, it's not time to complain about your playing time or things like that. I always say, and even back when I was at IMG and I was running the summer camps there, where we'd have 300 new kids every week. And I'd always do a little talk middle of the week about social media, because it's so important to young people nowadays. And I tell them, you're the CEO of your own company, and what you put on social media, people, it's out there. It's out there for people to read. And so, you know, I share different stories of recruiting stories of when I was recruiting, or friends of mine that are college coaches who are recruiting, and they went on somebody's Facebook page or Instagram and they see pictures of, you know, maybe involve alcohol or, you know, gestures or just things that they shouldn't, you know, that just don't shed a positive light on them. And it affects how coaches view them, you know, so they want to get that scholarship to University of Florida or wherever it is they want to play. They got to make sure they're representing themselves well in all areas. And one of those areas that people will look at, including employees, as you know, is all the social media. And so it's a really important lesson for young people to learn is you just don't put on there anything you want. You got to think about how it's representing you, how it's representing your school, your team, your coach, and importantly, your family. So it's just giving them a little perspective.
Well, and think about if you had social media when you guys were playing, what David Ross would have posted throughout all those bus rides, right?
I'm sure it would have been fine. Probably some dance moves doing the robot or something like that.
Right, right. Well, we were teasing earlier about your dad's story from the big league. So we'll finish up with that. And then I've got a couple rapid fire questions for you. But go ahead and shed some light as to the history of batting 1,000.
That sounds awesome. So my dad, who I'm really proud of, he played in the major leagues when he was in 1963 for the Houston Colt 45s before they were the Houston Astros. And he got called up for the last game of the season. He played with Rusty Staub, Joe Morgan, Jimmy Winn. I mean, just a lot of guys who ended up having legendary careers. And he played right field, got 5 plate appearances, walked twice, had 3 singles, scored 4 runs, drove in 4 runs. I think I said he had a diving catch out in the outfield. Just perfect day. And that was the last day of the season. He had back surgery, spinal fusion, and the technology back then was nowhere near what it is today, obviously. And he never played again. He tried to get back in the minor leagues, but he just wasn't the same. He couldn't move. His idol growing up was Mickey Mantle. He had a really good arm. He was what they'd say a 5-tool player. And my uncle Tom, who played for 18 years, was a year younger. And scouts that I've talked to said my dad was more talented. Tom, you know, my dad would say Tom had it together mentally, maybe a little bit better. But and Tom played for 18 years, so you never know how good my dad could have been. But one game in the big leagues, he's in the Guinness Book of World Records for the highest. You know, there's people that have gone 1-for-1 or 2-for-2, but he's the only one who's ever gone 3-for-3. And what I'm most proud of, though, and I think we talked about impact earlier. You know, impacting lives positively through the vehicle of sport. And I definitely know he's blessed more people as a coach over the last 50 years than he would have as a major league all-star. He's just amazing, the influence. I mean, kids that played for him 25 years ago, I run into them, they'll say, "Oh, how's your dad?" And they remember the nickname he had. He had nicknames before Steve Berman, ESPN, but so it's just, you know, really proud of just, you know, his accomplishments. And there's been a book written about him, an LA Times reporter. It's called Perfect, about his perfect day in the major leagues. And so he's still doing great. He just retired last year, but he's goes to the gym and works out every day. He's in better shape than I am. And just amazing.
What does Pete do for his workouts outside of being an athletic director?
You know what it is? It's that daddy strength. It's lifting the kids, swinging the kids around, chasing them around. It really is. You don't have time to work out. So you find, you know, if you get 15 minutes to do some sit-ups, actually I haven't done sit-ups in a long time, but I shouldn't even say that. But you find your time to get in there and get in the gym. We have really nice facilities at Principia in the weight rooms. I try to get in there occasionally and just, you know, try to motivate the athletes, but they're lifting like 3 times as much weight as I am. So it's kind of embarrassing.
Last question we'll follow up with. And if you were listening to Andy Dolich and Bill Schlau's episode about, you know, technology and the Giants and everything, there was a unique aspect in the episode where Bill and Andy were both talking about how their greatest accomplishment of their careers were their family. I would imagine yours is probably up there. Maybe talk about what kind of impact that's had on your life and maybe how that's changed your perspective as you've gone throughout your career.
Yeah, thank you. Fortunate, and I really appreciate this opportunity because now I can, speak about my wonderful wife, who we met in high school back at San Marino High School in California, just south of Pasadena, where Fred has his office. And so we've been together. We dated for 16 years all through my professional career. She stuck with me. And then we've been married now for about 15 years. And she's amazing. We have 3 kids. We talk about in sports how I love the idea of young people playing multiple sports instead of just specializing on one at really young ages. And I say the reason for that is because you might be a star in baseball, but you might be a role player in basketball. Well, when it comes to our kids, I'm definitely the role player. My wife is the rock star. She does so much. She's so wonderful. And then I come in and try to play that, you know, play my role as well as I can and provide as well as I can. But she's amazing. And our kids are fun. I mean, it just gives you perspective having young kids. I have 2 daughters And my youngest one's a little boy, and they're just a handful. They're a lot of fun. And, you know, I just can't imagine life. I don't remember life before having kids. It just is a whirlwind, but it's definitely a lot of fun.
Well, you did mention you did remember the bus rides, right? So
things like that, where you're trying to sleep on a 14-hour bus ride, and you wake up and your neck is turned sideways, and you know, you got to get in there and hit batting practice is something you never forget.
There you go. Well, Pete, we really appreciate having you on Life in the Front Office today. We certainly welcome you back and wish you the best of luck through the rest of the spring semester. Appreciate your time and looking forward to our next episode in the following week with a surprise guest. So stay tuned. And thanks again, Pete.
Jay, can't thank you enough. What you're doing is awesome. And Fred, and just that connection that you have, and you guys are touching and blessing a lot of lives.
Appreciate it. And if you want to listen to any of our other episodes after Pete, follow us on Life in the Front Office on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you have any comments or suggestions, tweet at us at Life Front Office. Thanks.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.